so that we don't lose track of them.
Okay, thank you,
Tracy. We need edit access, Tracy.
Okay, just doing that.
Does say anyone with the link.
Oh, it's yeah, but it's viewer. Oh, yeah,
I have to see.
Okay, so okay to start, Suzanne. Yeah, right. So, hi everyone. I'm Jeremy Gow. I'm a lecturer at Queen Mary, and I'm the training coordinator, one of the training coordinators for IGGY, based at Queen Mary. The other training coordinator is Ben. I think he's already said hi. So, yeah, introduce yourself, Ben, maybe.
Hi, everybody. Yeah, I'm Ben Kerman. I'm the training coordinator based at the University of York.
Yeah, so our role in IGGY is looking after the training program and making sure students are happy and engaged with that, which is the modules you might have heard about, but also there's lots of other activities like conferences and game jams. But what we're going to be talking about now is kind of the first step, I guess, in the application process. Some of you might have already taken this step, but some of you may not, which is finding a supervisor and a project to apply with. So the session after this is going to be about actually writing the proposal and advice on that, but we're talking about how you actually do that matchmaking process at the beginning and find who you want to work with and what you want to work on. So yeah, I guess we could start off by saying a bit about the context. I mean, we kind of assume in the session perhaps that you don't really know that much about a PhD and perhaps you don't have a supervisor identified yet, so this might not be new to you. But we want to ask, what is a supervisor? So Ben, do you want to take that question? What is a supervisor?
Great question. and there's a key one to know, which is it's a little bit different to kind of a relationship you might have had with a supervisor, you know, at different stages of your education already. A PhD supervisor is somebody who's going to be like extremely close to you and close to your work for several years. So yeah, the typical IGGY PhD takes 4 years. And through that, your supervisor is going to be the person who's constantly there with you in a supportive capacity. So what is important as knowing what they are is knowing what they aren't. And what they aren't is they're not a line manager. They're not any kind of boss. They are a person who's able to offer guidance and support through the PhD program. So someone to bounce ideas off, somebody to have discussions with, and somebody to build with, and somebody to help you navigate the complexities of both the university administrations, which can be quite complicated, but then also, you know, what's the expectation for a PhD? What's enough? What's a good conference to publish a paper in? You know, what's enough of a contribution to go into a conference paper or a journal paper, and things like that? What, you know, what does a final thesis look like? What are the kind of chapters that you have in? Your supervisor will help with that. They'll also not know all the answers, right? So there's no point in doing research if we already know what the outcome is. So your supervisor will be hopefully an expert or someone very familiar with the methods that you're applying and being able to help you structure your research in an appropriate way. But it's not like they will be able to say whether you're right or wrong. They're not marking you. They're not a lecturer. They're a collaborator throughout your PhD. So yeah, this is a really important thing because you can spend so much time with them, as Peter mentioned, that decision is really, really key. It's really important. And that's the decision you're making right about now.
Yeah, absolutely. It's critical that you get it right at this stage, because you will, if you were successful, be with that person for several years and meeting them on a very regular basis and relying on them to help steer you through the program. Of course, it's not necessarily set in stone. Some people do change supervisors during their PhD, but that's usually for exceptional circumstances because they've changed their project radically, or perhaps they're not getting on with their supervisor. That's fairly unusual. So you want to get it right now. Mm-hmm. When you get recruited, if you apply and it's successful in your application, then you'll come onto the program with a primary supervisor. So one person who's responsible for your supervision, either at Queen Mary or at York. But actually, supervision is a little bit more complex than that in reality. Typically, a student will, well, all students have multiple supervisors. They'll have a second supervisor who's kind of there as a kind of backstop and a kind of another source of advice. And they may have more than one second supervisor. And they may, in fact, have supervisors. Well, usually at Iggy, we have supervisors at other sites. So all the Queen Mary students have a supervisor, say, at York and vice versa. And there's other sites that are involved in the programme previously where we've got supervisors there pitching in as well. So, yeah, so it can be quite a complex picture, but you'll have that one person that you really need to kind of identify as the primary that you want to work with. Okay, so so at that application point, there's that single supervisor. When you get in, it can get a little bit more complex with a team of people supporting you. And at this stage now, if you're heading towards the application, it maybe it's a bit open-ended as well. Maybe you actually, probably a good way of approaching this is to have more than one name in mind for people who you might want to work with, and to be speaking to multiple people about potential projects before you commit to developing an application with one of them. If you're in the stages of writing an application, I'd guess, I don't know what you think, Ben, but I'd recommend that you probably, at that stage, are narrowing it down to one person you want to commit. But at the early stages, perhaps if you haven't got to the writing of the proposal yet, then it's okay to be speaking to multiple people, and that's kind of expected. Okay. So I guess the question is, how do you actually go about that? There's some quite obvious ways. I think it's worth highlighting because perhaps people aren't aware of them. Let me share my screen. So perhaps the most obvious way is going to our website, where we have recommended projects or advertised projects. And there's a small number of projects on here, which we've chosen to kind of put on our website as examples of kind of fantastic projects which we want to see succeed. But there's only a very small selection on here, and it's worth saying that this is not, I expect most of the applications we're going to get this year are probably not going to be from projects on this list, right? So this isn't exclusive list by any means. And that's going to be basically, I think, a running theme looking through some of the resources you can find for finding supervisors and projects, is that we're not being exclusive when we put this stuff on our websites. These are recommendations or suggestions. And really, you can come in with a proposal, I think, with any academic, with a supervisor who is based at Queen Mary, an academic at Queen Mary or York, as long as it's meeting those criteria in terms of scope, which Peter was talking about before. Okay, so if that project is scope and right in scope and right for Iggy, and we think that supervisor is capable of supervising that project with you, then that's viable, right? So we're really not being exclusive at all. But yeah, if you are looking for a supervisor, then this is probably your first port of call to get some idea of the kind of things that we're really hoping to see funded, right? And there's a selection of projects here, a mix of Queen Mary and York. And if you click through, and for example, I think we were just talking about Raluca, who was actually a student on the programme. There's now a lecturer in the Game AI group with me. Yep, you can see the contact details there and you know who to get in touch with. But yep, Suzanne.
Yeah, I just wanted to add, whoever was in the Queen Mary, or I think it might have been X session for PhD applications, it was said there that if you opt for a project, you don't need to contact the supervisor. So this is not the case. Please, if you opt for a project that we feature on our website, please still contact the supervisor. So just to highlight this, please.
Yeah, this is really just to kind of make this matchmaking process easier, and you've still got the same responsibilities as every applicant, which is you have to talk to your supervisor, you have to negotiate that project with them, and write your own proposal, right? These are not preset projects, even though they're giving you firm directions for things that you could apply under. You still have to write that application, and yeah, we'll be getting onto that in another session. Okay, so yeah, we have some kind of exemplar projects, I guess, here, but it might be that your research interests don't fit any of these. So, you know, you might want to look more widely. We also have a long list of, I think Peter said, over 60 academics listed on our website of people who have declared interest that they would like to be an Iggy supervisor. Again, not an exclusive list, right? But you can look through this list and find, for example, people who have declared that they are accepting students this year. Again, to suggest for information, it might be that people who are not on the accepted student list might actually want to work with you when you get in touch with them too. Explore quite widely. Each of these academics, they've done made an attempt to kind of define their research interests and some keywords. But again, this doesn't really describe them exhaustively. So what you want to do before contacting them is probably do a little bit of background research about this person, about this academic. Go and read some of their papers, right? Go and find out what research group they're interested in, who are they working with, and that kind of thing. So that you get a good idea that they're really in scope for you, right? They're really got the same interests as you. Ben, I don't know what you want to maybe add to that.
Absolutely. So as I said, this is a good place to start. It's always worth speaking to people, exploring them. I think something we have mentioned as well is that like the lists aren't exclusive. People can be anywhere. Everybody on this list has an understanding of IGGY. Hopefully they understand how the program works, they understand what the scope is, especially they understand the kind of projects that are funded through IGGY. If you're approaching someone who isn't on this list, it's really important that in your communication with them that you make it clear that it's IGGY you're interested in applying for, because they will need to have a look at the requirements and then make sure that they're giving you the appropriate advice for your proposal as you're building it to make sure that it fits within the scope. But what we really don't want to happen is for you to spend ages working on a really cool proposal and then us not being able to take it forward because it isn't in the scope of IGGY. So people on this list will know what that is. And if it's someone else from another department who might not have had an IGGY student before, it's going to be really important just to make sure that you talk about that with them, talk about the scope and then making sure it fits. And as always, they or you are welcome to contact any of the IGGY management team to talk about that issue, just to make sure as your proposal is being built that you're aiming towards the right kind of scope.
Okay, and just to pick up on that kind of idea of really trying quite, putting a lot of effort into really looking quite widely, not just picking on the kind of coming across the first name and going with that one person. You want to be thinking of a good shortlist of people who you might contact if that's possible. So how do you do that? I mean, if they're not on this page advertising directly their interests, perhaps it's something like games and autism, where you've got a very specific interest that you want to follow up, but you can't see that particular research reflected on our recommended projects or on our list of staff. Another option you can go is go and look at the students who are already on the program, right, and see the different areas they're working in. So perhaps if you're interested in something like player research, you can go through each of the students, look at who's supervising them. If you've got somebody who's close to your research interest, you might want to look at what papers they've published already, perhaps they have, and what authors they're collaborating with. So it really pays to put in a bit of kind of research time here to kind of get a good feeling about who are those people hidden in Queen Mary or York who might be exactly right for me. And then another way of approaching it is actually go to Queen Mary and York's either EECS or computer science web pages and look through the different research groups that we've got there. And that's another way into finding people, okay? It may not be a case of finding exactly the right person to work with. Sometimes it takes a little bit of chaining. You find a professor who may not be taking on students, may not be exactly in your area, but it's close, and they might be able to recommend somebody that you can then go and speak to. Okay. All right. So that's kind of the aspect of finding people.
So Jerry, I was going to add in there about another disciplinary point, which is so IGGY is hosted within the computer science departments in QMUL and in York. However, supervisors aren't required to be in those departments. Yeah. So although, we're looking at the...
That's really important, yeah.
Yes, and sort of research page here, looking at the research groups in QMUL. I'm based in the Department of Arts and Creative Technologies, and there's many supervisors in York across the university. So there's no restriction. They just have to be an academic at York or a QMUL. obviously there has to be some the scope fit, so they have to be capable of supervising an Iggy project. So you'd have to be really careful to make sure that as a team between you, your proposer and the supervisor, that you that you're familiar enough with the methods and the what counts as an EPSRC project, especially. And in those cases where you're not sure, it is that's one of the points where a second supervisor might be looked for earlier. So having a primary supervisor in education, for example, but then a secondary supervisor who is based in computer science or electronic engineering or something that's more aligned with EPSRC remit, that is able to sort to help translate or fit the research appropriately within that area. But yeah, there's certainly not a limit on departments at this stage. Yeah.
Absolutely. That's a really important point. I do want to give that impression. And it's at Queen Mary, it's a little bit confusing if you're interested in perhaps more psychological side of games research and you think there's an Iggy project that you could do with that. There's a lot of supervisors are based in social and biological sciences, right? So that's not an obvious place to look, but you'll find a bunch of psychologists there, some of whom might be interested in Iggy projects. Hey.
Yep.
I guess before we go to questions, I mean, we'll say a little bit about the other aspects of you make a shortlist, perhaps you found some people to talk to. It's also worth investing some time in really understanding whether this person is right for you. Like we said, you're going to spend a lot of time working with them. So it may not be people might be interested in a particular area, the same area as you, but unless there's a you think you can work with them, then you shouldn't be thinking about maybe applying with them. So things you can do there is, you know, look up their work already, look at the kinds of things that they've published, have they published in the same the kind of area that you want to work in. Maybe they haven't done exactly the same kinds of research topics, but look at the kind of methodologies they're using, the way they go about doing research. Is that match up with what you expect to do in your PhD. I don't know what else we think about whether this person's right for you. I guess, are they enthusiastic? Are they engaged? It's worth noting that academics, especially during semester, are often extremely busy, so they may not be getting back to you very quickly. Some tips there would be to, if they haven't responded to an email, doesn't mean they're not interested, but perhaps you want to email them again. That's usually perfectly acceptable. Academics don't mind being reminded that they have to pick up a task when they have so many. Do email multiple times if that's what it takes. And another thing is that when you write that email introducing yourself and perhaps asking if you can have a meeting, try and make it something which somebody can respond to quite quickly, right? Rather than it being, you don't want necessarily to see six paragraphs of text with perhaps quite complicated questions there. Just do an introduction and save that complicated discussion for when you have that face-to-face meeting.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
I mean, that touches on one of the main points in this session I wanted to make, which is about ownership, which is that the project proposal that you're putting in is yours. You own it, and you will own your PhD. It's better to go with kind of a half-form idea that you're looking for feedback from than saying, I want to work with you, please tell me what I should research. You always have to have ownership. It's, your supervisor can offer feedback or guidance as you build a proposal, as they would when you're doing a PhD. But it's really important that it is your proposal and you have some ownership over it. And that is also true for the predefined projects. So as mentioned, you can't just copy and paste that into the application form. You need to take that and then make it yours and demonstrate how kind of methodology you'd follow, how that fits with your experience.
I'd say it's especially true for those projects because we might get a few applications under each one, and we want to see why we would want to recruit you in particular. Right, so you'll demonstrate that something strong about that project.
And actually, it's worth, I think, those projects, the predefined projects, it's worth noting. So we carefully selected those to cover a range of different Iggy topics and a range of different supervisors across the different institutions. So even if none of them speak to you directly and they're not something that you might want to consider following up, they represent a good model for what an Iggy project looks like, or what we think an Iggy project looks like. So they are worth reading through closely to have a look, and then as you're building your own proposal, that you can make sure that, you know, it's a similar kind of scope, a similar kind of fit, and that maybe the methodologies might align with some of those projects, even if it's not exactly the same. Because yeah, we were careful that all those projects do fit, so they're a good model for new projects too.
Okay, so we maybe a few minutes for questions. I think NT466 has said, we'll go on the list of Iggy projects. Are we obliged to follow one of them in our PhD proposal? Absolutely not. Yes, as we just made clear, those are just some exemplar projects and things we think are things we'd love to see funded. But Iggy is open to anything within the kind of scope that's been described already.
Furthermore, is there's no, when we get the applications, we treat them all equally. So we're not prioritizing those projects. Those are just good starting places. So yeah, there's no different streaming. It's every proposal will be treated the same.
Okay, absolutely. Any other questions? Just looking at the document. I think most of this stuff has been answered already by Tracy and Helen.
There's a question in the chat from Ross about HCAP, which is that a teaching qualification, HCAP? So broadly, it is possible to do teaching alongside your PhD. There's a limit to the number of hours that you're permitted to take. However, that, you know, many Iggy students do teaching. That can be kind of guest lectureships. It can be teaching assistant kind of roles within the university. Certainly at York, that happens quite a lot, but it's also not a requirement. So you're not expected to do teaching as part of the PhD programme. As for studying a specific programme, again, speaking for York, there are students who do teaching qualifications alongside their PhD, and that can work. It tends to be a conversation between you and your supervisor, which is, you know, given the current stage you're at, if you need to do a lot of work, then maybe another thing happening at the same time might not be appropriate. But if things are going well and then you feel capable of doing something alongside, then that can usually be supported. Certainly at York, I'm not sure about QMUL.
Yeah, I mean, I think the restrictions are basically imposed by EPSRC, our funders, but it's a very small number of hours that you should be doing anything that's not your PhD. That's kind of a low cap on that. So it depends on the commitment there. I'm not familiar with that qualification. If it's anything like a quite substantial teaching qualification, then I'd say no, not in your first year, especially, because you've got quite a lot already with the Iggy training program. There's information, so you're asking about the training program as well. There's information on the website. But there's, you know, in the first year, basically, there's a predefined set of modules which take up quite a big chunk of your time. And you're developing the kind of beginnings of your PhD alongside that. So to have space in for anything else, any other qualifications that first year, it's not really realistic. But as Ben said, for the rest of your PhD, perhaps there's flexibility there, and you need to work out with a supervisor. So maybe actually that could be a conversation you have ahead of time with potential supervisors, but not that. A related aspect, I guess, is that a lot of our PhD students do get involved in teaching, as Ben said. But typically we don't really let them do that until their second year of their PhD, because they've just got too much on. Okay.
I think the same is true of commitments outside. Is there's a general expectation that the PhD is a full-time thing. If you find it must be full-time and we can't do part-time. And yeah, so if you feel like having a full-time job as well as doing things that you've already got commitments for, that might be something to consider.
We only recruit full-time students on the programme. There are some part-time students because of personal circumstances, but that's exceptional, I think. As in, they've started full-time and then moved to part-time. So a question from somebody interested in the intersection between information, narrative, and interactivity. So narrative-driven serious games. Is there interest from EE supervisors in this area? Yes, I think there are. It'd be hard to drop any names right off the top of my head, but if you have something like that where there is a, you've got a strong idea of a topic there, then as we said, you know, go through these the raw resources on our website to see what kind of projects are out there already. If you're really stuck, then of course you can contact us as well. We're also happy to make suggestions, but I don't think we can't replicate the kind of research that might have to go into that. But yes, I'd say that's something that's a worthwhile topic to pursue an application. All right, I guess we're over time now. So if there's